Chapter 59. Treats of the company of Mr. Vincent Crummles, and of his affairs, domestic and theatrical, as Mr. Crummles had a strange four-legged animal in the stables, which he called a pony, and a vehicle of unknown design, on which he bestowed the appellation of a four-wheeled phaeton. Nicholas proceeded on his journey next morning with greater ease than he had expected, the manager and himself occupying the front seat, and the master Crumleses and Smike being packed together behind, in company with a wicker basket defended from wet by a stout oilskin, in which were the broad swords, pistols, pigtails, nautical costumes, and other professional necessaries of the aforesaid young gentleman. The pony took his time upon the road, and possibly in consequence of his theatrical education evinced, every now and then, a strong inclination to lie down. However, Mr. Vincent Crummles kept him up pretty well, by jerking the rein, and plying the whip, and when these means failed, and the animal came to a stand, the elder Master Crummles got out and kicked him. By dint of these encouragements, he was persuaded to move from time to time, and they jogged on, as Mr. Crummles truly observed, very comfortably for all parties. "He's a good pony at bottom," said Mr. Crummles, turning to Nicholas. "He might have been at bottom, but he certainly was not at top, seeing that his coat was of the roughest and most ill-favored kind." So, Nicholas merely observed, that he shouldn't wonder if he was. "Many and many is the circuit this pony has gone," said Mr. Crummles, flicking him skillfully on the eyelid for old acquaintance sake. "He is quite one of us. His mother was on the stage." "Was she?" rejoined Nicholas. "She ate apple pie at a circus for upwards of 14 years, said the manager, "fired pistols, and went to bed in a nightcap, and, in short, took the low comedy entirely. His father was a dancer." "Was he at all distinguished?" "Not very," said the manager. "He was rather a low sort of pony. The fact is, he had been originally jobbed out by the day, and he never quite got over his old habits. He was clever in melodrama too, but too broad. When the mother died, he took the port wine business." "The port wine business?" cried Nicholas. "Drinking port wine with the clown," said the manager, "but he was greedy, and one night bit off the bowl of the glass, and choked himself, so his vulgarity was the death of him at last." The descendant of this ill-starred animal requiring increased attention from Mr. Crummles as he progressed in his day's work, that gentleman had very little time for conversation. Nicholas was thus left at leisure to entertain himself with his own thoughts, until they arrived at the drawbridge at Portsmouth, when Mr. Crummles pulled up. "We'll get down here," said the manager, "and the boys will take him round to the stable, and call at my lodgings with the luggage. You had better let yours be taken there, for the present." Thanking Mr. Vincent Crummles for his obliging offer, Nicholas jumped out, and, giving Smike his arm, accompanied the manager up High Street on their way to the theater, feeling nervous and uncomfortable enough at the prospect of an immediate introduction to a scene so new to him. They passed a great many bills, pasted against the walls and displayed in windows, wherein the names of Mr. Vincent Crummles, Mrs. Vincent Crummles, Master Crummles, Master P. Crummles, and Miss Crummles, were printed in very large letters, and everything else in very small ones, and, turning at length into an entry, in which was a strong smell of orange peel and lamp oil, with an undercurrent of sawdust, groped their way through a dark passage, and, descending a step or two, threaded a little maze of canvas screens and paint pots, and emerged upon the stage of the Portsmouth Theatre. "Here we are," said Mr. Crummles. It was not very light, but Nicholas found himself close to the first entrance on the prompt side, among bare walls, moldy scenes, mildewed clouds, heavily daubed draperies, and dirty floors. He looked about him. Ceiling, pit, boxes, gallery, orchestra, fittings, and decorations of every kind, all looked coarse, cold, gloomy, and wretched. Is this a theater? ... whispered Smike, in amazement. I thought it was a blaze of light and finery. ... Why, so it is, replied Nicholas, hardly less surprised. But not by day, Smike, not by day. ... The manager's voice recalled him from a more careful inspection of the building, to the opposite side of the proscenium, where, at a small mahogany table with rickety legs, and of an oblong shape, sat a stout, portly female, apparently between 40 and 50, in a tarnished silk cloak, with her bonnet dangling by the strings in her hand, and her hair, of which she had a great quantity, braided in a large festoon over each temple. Mr. Johnson, said the manager, for Nicholas had given the name which Newman Knox had bestowed upon him in his conversation with Mrs. Kenwicks, let me introduce Mrs. Vincent Crummles. ... I am glad to see you, sir, said Mrs. Vincent Crummles, in a sepulchral voice. I am very glad to see you, and still more happy to hail you as a promising member of our corps. ... The lady shook Nicholas by the hand as she addressed him in these terms. He saw it was a large one, but had not expected quite such an iron grip as that with which she honored him. And this, said the lady, crossing to Smike, as tragic actresses cross, when they obey a stage direction, and this is the other. You too, are welcome, sir. ... He'll do, I think, my dear. ... said the manager, taking a pinch of snuff. He is admirable, replied the lady. An acquisition indeed. ... As Mrs. Vincent Crummles recrossed back to the table, there bounded onto the stage from some mysterious inlet, a little girl in a dirty white frock with tucks up to the knees, short trousers, sandaled shoes, white spencer, pink gauze bonnet, green veil and curl papers, who turned a pirouette, cut twice in the air, turned another pirouette, then, looking off at the opposite wing, shrieked, bounded forward to within 6 inches of the footlights, and fell into a beautiful attitude of terror, as a shabby gentleman in an old pair of buff slippers came in at one powerful slide, and chattering his teeth, fiercely brandished a walking stick. They are going through the Indian savage and the maiden, said Mrs. Crummles. Oh! said the manager, the little ballet interlude. Very good, go on. A little this way, if you please, Mr. Johnson. That'll do. Now! The manager clapped his hands as a signal to proceed, and the savage, becoming ferocious, made a slide towards the maiden. But the maiden avoided him in 6 twirls, and came down, at the end of the last one, upon the very points of her toes. This seemed to make some impression upon the savage, for, after a little more ferocity and chasing of the maiden in 2 corners, he began to relent, and stroked his face several times with his right thumb and 4 fingers, thereby intimating that he was struck with admiration of the maiden's beauty. Acting upon the impulse of this passion, the savage, began to hit himself severe thumps in the chest, and to exhibit other indications of being desperately in love, which being rather a prosy proceeding, was very likely the cause of the maiden's falling asleep. Whether it was or no, asleep she did fall, sound as a church, on a sloping bank, and the savage perceiving it, leant his left ear on his left hand, and nodded sideways, to intimate to all whom it might concern, that she was asleep, and no shamming. Being left to himself, the savage had a dance, all alone. Just as he left off, the maiden woke up, rubbed her eyes, got off the bank, and had a dance all alone to such a dance, that the savage looked on in ecstasy all the while, and when it was done, plucked from a neighboring tree some botanical curiosity, resembling a small pickled cabbage, and offered it to the maiden, who at first wouldn't have it, but on the savage shedding tears relented. Then the savage jumped for joy, then the maiden jumped for rapture at the sweet smell of the pickled cabbage. Then the savage and the maiden danced violently together, and, finally, the savage dropped down on one knee, and the maiden stood on one leg upon his other knee, thus concluding the ballet, and leaving the spectators in a state of pleasing uncertainty, whether she would ultimately marry the savage, or return to her friends. Very well indeed, apostrophe said Mr. Crummles. Bravo! Apostrophe, bravo! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Nicholas, resolved to make the best of everything. Beautiful! Apostrophe, apostrophe, this, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Vincent Crummles, bringing the maiden forward, this is the infant phenomenon Miss Nanetta Crummles. Apostrophe, your daughter? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Nicholas. My daughter, apostrophe, replied Mr. Vincent Crummles. The idol of every place we go into, sir. We have had complimentary letters about this girl, sir, from the nobility and gentry of almost every town in England. Apostrophe, I am not surprised at that, apostrophe, said Nicholas. She must be quite a natural genius. Apostrophe, quite a. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Crummles stopped. Language was not powerful enough to describe the infant phenomenon. I'll tell you what, sir, apostrophe, he said. The talent of this child is not to be imagined. She must be seen, sir, seen to be ever so faintly appreciated. There, go to your mother, my dear. Apostrophe, may I ask how old she is? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Nicholas. You may, sir, apostrophe, replied Mr. Crummles, looking steadily in his questioner's face, as some men do, when they have doubts about being implicitly believed in what they are going to say. She is 10 years of age, sir. Apostrophe, not more. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not a day. Apostrophe, dear me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Nicholas, it's extraordinary. Apostrophe, it was. For the infant phenomenon, though of short stature, had a comparatively aged countenance, and had moreover been precisely the same age not perhaps to the full extent of the memory of the oldest inhabitant, but certainly for 5 good years. But she had been kept up late every night, and put upon an unlimited allowance of gin and water from infancy, to prevent her growing tall, and perhaps this system of training had produced in the infant phenomenon these additional phenomena. While this short dialogue was going on, the gentleman who had enacted the savage came up, with his walking shoes on his feet, and his slippers in his hand, to within a few paces, as if desirous to join in the conversation. Deeming this a good opportunity, he put in his word. Talent there, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the savage, nodding towards Miss Crummles. Nicholas assented. Ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the actor, setting his teeth together, and drawing in his breath with a hissing sound. She oughtn't to be in the provinces, she oughtn't. Apostrophe, what do you mean? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the manager. I mean to say, apostrophe, replied the other, warmly, that she is too good for country boards, and that she ought to be in one of the large houses in London, or nowhere, and I tell you more, without mincing the matter, that if it wasn't for envy and jealousy in some quarter that you know of, she would be. Perhaps you will introduce me here, Mr. Crummles. Apostrophe, Mr. Fowler, apostrophe, said the manager, presenting him to Nicholas. Happy to know you, sir. Apostrophe, Mr. Fowler touched the brim of his hat with his forefinger, and then shook hands. A recruit, sir, I understand. Apostrophe, apostrophe, an unworthy one, apostrophe, replied Nicholas. Did you ever see such a set out as that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, whispered the actor, drawing him away, as Crummles left them to speak to his wife. As what? Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Fowler made a funny face from his pantomime collection, and pointed over his shoulder. You don't mean the infant phenomenon? Apostrophe apostrophe, infant humbug, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Fowler. There isn't a female child of common sharpness in a charity school that couldn't do better than that. She may thank her stars she was born a manager's daughter. Apostrophe, you seem to take it to heart, apostrophe observed Nicholas, with a smile. Yes, by Jove, and well I may, apostrophe said Mr. Fowler, drawing his arm through his, and walking him up and down the stage. Isn't it enough to make a man crusty to see that little sprawler put up in the best business every night, and actually keeping money out of the house, by being forced down the people's throats, while other people are passed over? Isn't it extraordinary to see a man's confounded family conceit blinding him, even to his own interest? Why, I know of 15 and 6 pence that came to Southampton one night last month to see me dance the Highland Fling, and what's the consequence? I've never been put up in it, since never once, while the infant phenomenon has been grinning through artificial flowers at 5 people, and a baby in the pit, and 2 boys in the gallery, every night. Apostrophe, if I may judge from what I have seen of you, apostrophe said Nicholas, you must be a valuable member of the company. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe replied Mr. Fowler, beating his slippers together. To knock the dust out, I can come at pretty well nobody better, perhaps, in my own line, but having such business as one gets here, is like putting lead on one's feet instead of chalk, and dancing in fetters without the credit of it. Holloa, old fellow, how are you? Apostrophe, the gentleman addressed in these latter words was a dark-complexioned man, inclining indeed to sallow, with long thick black hair, and very evident inclinations, although he was close-shaved, of a stiff beard, and whiskers of the same deep shade. His age did not appear to exceed 30, though many at first sight would have considered him much older, as his face was long, and very pale, from the constant application of stage paint. He wore a checked shirt, an old green coat with new gilt buttons, a neckerchief of broad red and green stripes, and full blue trousers. He carried, too, a common ash walking stick, apparently more for show than use, as he... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.